Alright, this is Pure Decking show number 373 for Thursday, somewhere in time. I don't really care what day it is. This is the show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game, and digging up old computer books on hacking and seeing if they're still relevant. I'm Morps. Tonight, I almost fell out of the chair, and we have Madman. What's up, Madman?
I'm finally off work, and that's amazing. Excellent. And I have beer. Makes it even better.
Yes. And a man who... Oh, wait. I'm not going to do an IHN introduction. RU is here.
Hello.
I was going to say, I had a good one for an IHN introduction, but, you know, it's...
Ain't no IHN.
Yeah.
We try to keep it out of the IHN realm.
He'd be a champion wife beater if it wasn't for other people's wives.
Not a bad hobby.
Beating other people's wives?
Why not? At least I don't beat my own wife.
That's right. It's like, why not? She hits back.
Probably fucking would. Oh, actually, she'd just go grab a knife and wait for me to sleep.
Fuck! That got dark.
Yeah.
You can own a woman or you can own a knife?
we don't do arguments or anything like that. It's just swift retribution whenever you feel you've been slighted. So,
I guess depending on the level of slight, it goes from, you know, cling wrap over the toilet to stabbings in bed. So
tying pinky toes to bed, screaming fire at 2 a.m.
Oh, fuck. That's
probably the best so far.
Oh, I bet that hurt.
Yeah, you just don't drink the last beer. It's not on.
Oh, this beer tastes a lot like laxative. That's weird.
Don't worry, I've had dictionaries thrown at me. Yeah.
I'm actually not kidding about the old hacker books. I was going through the bookshelf trying to decide what was worth keeping. I'm trying to go through a bunch of my old stuff. And... I found this old Secrets of a Super Hacker by The Nightmare. This thing's from 1994. And, like, was the shit back in high school, right?
Yeah.
And I've already flipped through it a little bit. It's, you know, keep 2 5-and-a-quarter discs so that you have 1 for discs you find in the trash and 1 that's good. And, you know, I think some of it's still going to be relevant because it's talking about social engineering and finding passwords under keyboards and shit like that. But then they're talking about, you know, mainframe terminals, and they've got basic programs in here. So it's like, I don't know about that so much. So I'm thinking about rereading it just to see what's still worth it. That or taking it to work and giving it to my level ones and be like, yeah, here you go.
Or the whole keeping 2 storage media. You just change it from floppies to... I don't know, drives.
Well, there's not really a good analog for that anymore. Actually, the better analog is, you know, keep 2 computers, 1 for doing stupid shit on, like connecting to Tor and flash drives you find on the ground, and, you know, maybe pick one that you can that doesn't have a working Wi-Fi card so that you can kill its internet connection just by unplugging it or something. And then, you know, having the one you do your regular stuff on. So, but that would actually be an interesting thing to do, too, would be to take this book and rewrite it as an updated version of it.
Yeah.
Man, that'd be work.
There you go.
That would be work, though, wouldn't it?
It would be. Yeah. But then again, you'd have a product at the end of it that you could sell.
Sure. Swap out the basic for Python. Keep any examples that are still useful. Swap out the... you know, Unix terminal references for stuff for like Linux and modern, you know, infrastructure.
Actually, that's a good task for your firsts, your new guys. Hey, this chapter here, I want you to modernize it for me.
Just to let me know to see how if they understand.
Yeah, just see how well they understand it. Because really, that's the basics you've got to build everything on.
Kinda. I mean, this book's from the adversary standpoint, not the defender, and most of them at work are supposed to be doing defense work. But
well, you should know who's attacking you, man.
Dude, one of our
everyone.
New
hires, yep, yeah. Know your enemy.
One of our new hires is super green and just moved into security, and so he's got. I guess he like watched a bunch of conference videos, and so he's got this. You know, idea about security, and he's asking us things that, you know, it's like, what sandbox are you guys using for what?
What? Well, wait, just, what?
Like, yeah, what sandbox are you guys using? Just, you know, spin up a virtual machine that's appropriate for whatever it is at the time. I don't keep a dedicated one around. I mean, oh,
well, it sounds like he's enthusiastic, man.
He is.
That's the main thing.
I'm a little worried that he's going to like get disillusioned and quit after we spend all this time training him, because he's going to be like, "Oh, wait, you mean I have to do work? I'm not just pen testing all the time." No,
yeah.
No. And even when you're pen testing all the time, nobody ever tells you when you're learning how to do pen testing and actual security work that about 75% of that work has nothing to do with, you know, like at the Linux console, breaking into shit, running Meterpreter, you know, doing the epic cool hacks and all that. No, no. At least 75% of your time, and more like 90% of it, is going to be spent writing it all up. Here's how I got into this system.
Here's the white paper after I did this.
Yeah. Here's how you get into this system. Here's the issue. Here's the recommended fixes. Here's the standards where we recommend fixing them. Here's the appendix with all the data. You're going to look at this, ask me two stupid questions, and then round file it. But here's all the work. So,
dude, isn't it hot chicks in spas at midnight after an elite hacking? You know?
I see. Oh, did Wolverine get slobbered on by a hot chick while hacking?
Oh, fuck. What, a swordfish. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's totally what it is.
That's what it is, man. That and hooking up with a hot version of Angelina Jolie after you just finished skateboarding through a subway.
I love that movie, though, man. Come on.
It's a great movie, man. It's everything that it's not.
Total bullshit. But it's great. You know, the thing that always blows my mind in that movie is at the opening, he's a little kid, right? And he knocks out all these computers in the Wall Street Wall Street, you know, okay, whatever. And, you know, then they show him, you know, 10 years later when he's grown up, and they're all still using, you know, Motorola 68K Max and shit like that.
Yeah.
Actually, I was looking into the props for that movie because some of them are kind of interesting looking. And, it turns out what their prop guys did, because almost all of the images in those computers, they needed the 68K Max because they were about the only computer at the time that could do some of the graphics. So they bought a whole bunch of shit like DOS machines, Amigas, and Macs, and then hacked Power Max into all of them.
Nice.
And it's just like,
nice.
Damn. And it actually makes sense, because that movie was before the idea of going back in and digitally inserting all the screens was a thing.
Yeah.
So because they actually needed the screen showing the renders, they needed to build machines that could actually do it. So they just bought all these Power Macs, so they only had the one platform to support. And then
I'd love to see the outtakes of them doing their lines and the machine crashing.
Oh, that'd be funny.
I wonder how many times that happened, you know?
Well, just, you know, you even see it in the movie when they try to show them all typing. None of the actors actually know how to type. And then whenever their fingers aren't on screen, you all hear the rapid key presses. And it's like, but then they show them typing, and it's like, you know, hunt and peck. And it's just like, come on, guys. But, yeah, there's some Digital Dojo for you. Go find the original Hackers movie and watch that. Find a high-res version of it.
Oh, high-res versions, you could probably catch a nipple.
Yeah. Yes, you can.
Yep. A couple of scenes in there for that.
It was pre-surgery for Jolene.
Well,
she's actually hot.
Yeah. And one of those, I rewatched the movie not too long ago, and I realized, man, I missed that scene as a kid. What the hell? And it's probably because I probably had the TV edited version or something. So
watch that and then watch Gone in 60 Seconds, the remake with Angelina Jolie, and see how much plastic she had inserted. Like, dude, that Gone in 60 Seconds, man, that was straight after her, like, full recovery and everything.
Oh, her she lips, looked rough. I don't think I ever saw it.
Her lips look like a baboon. Oh, she pretty much started the duck lip look. It was terrible.
Jeez.
The movie was terrible, too, but...
Explains why I never saw it.
Yeah, I watched the original one. Much better.
I'm just going to have a cough throughout the show. Deal with it.
Just before we started doing the show, there must have been an air pressure change. My ears are all blocked. One of my noses is blocked. I'm with you, buddy.
I think I breathed a little bit of bourbon by accident, and that's what set me off. But anyways, so...
Adding it to the list.
Add it to the list. So first up is an article from Wired. Best Buy made these smart home gadgets dumb again.
Good. So
they... Fuck. Try this again. Last week, a series of smart home gadgets became dumb again. On November the 6th, Best Buy pulled the plug on its line of Insignia Connect products, including a convertible freezer fridge to two kinds of smart... I know. It's not going to stop. Fuck.
Do you want to go get some water? Go get some water. Me and Madman will banter for a bit.
All right, yeah. That might be necessary. 1 second. Fuck.
All right, Madman. Dead air until he comes back.
You know he comes back and listens to these sometimes, right?
I know. That's what I'm saying. We just do dead air for the entire time. He's just like, motherfuckers, you know? But I hate listening back to the shows. But you got to do it. Got to do it every now and then.
Our two listeners have left.
Wow, his mic really picks up a long distance.
Oh, yeah. Especially if he's ever playing Beat Saber.
Oh, don't. Yeah, we're not going to mention that. I'll take the coughing any day on Beat Saber.
Oh, fuck. Are you guys talking about Beat Saber?
I was just referencing how far we can hear your mic. It picks up quite a ways back. I'd say at least 10 feet.
Well, damn it.
Power through it.
Yep.
One episode. It'll be known as the coughing episode.
Yeah, that's what it'll be known as. Not the Beat Saber episode. Last week, a series of smart home gadgets became dumb again. On November the 6th, Best Buy pulled the plug on its line of Insignia Connect products, including a convertible freezer fridge, two kinds of smart plugs, a smart light switch, and a Wi-Fi connected camera. Best Buy offered people who purchased the gadgets partial gift cards, not full refunds. Most of the items still have some functionality, but are no longer equipped with smart features that led people to choose them in the first place. The Wi-Fi camera, however, ceased to function altogether. The incident is a salient reminder that when you buy an internet-connected device, you're betting the company behind it will continue supporting its corresponding software in the future. That means regularly updating apps to ensure compatibility with the latest smartphones, patching bugs, and more. It's impossible to tell ahead of time what brands will outlast their competitors and will shutter, get acquired, or pivot. One day you may wake up and find your smart freezer is suddenly stupid. Well... That's the thing, is it's not so much that the smart freezer is now just a freezer. It's that the smart freezer doesn't work at all.
Well, that's the problem, because some of those things require being connected constantly.
Mm-hmm.
And without being, you know, calling, dialing up home every hour, it goes, well, I just don't fucking work anymore. Fuck you.
Yeah, well, it's a Steam problem, right? What if Steam goes out of business? How much of your game library quits working? What if iTunes shut down? How many people lose their entire music collection? You know, it's
at least with those two examples, Steam could be like, we're going out of business. You have so many hours or days to download all of your games.
That's assuming they give you that warning, though.
Yeah, I think you'd see Steam getting shaky before it went to the wall. But I don't see that happening with Steam. The simple fact that it works and Small prediction, I think a lot of these smaller game launches are going to disappear in the next couple of years because people are just goddamn sick of having 300 fucking accounts just to play a game.
Well, I mean, you know, fuck, too. Go look and, well, I mean, hell, I think I probably got a couple running. Let's see, Task Manager. Let's see, how much memory are some of these launchers using up? The Razer thing takes 37 meg. It looks like Steam itself is pulling in, looks like about maybe a couple hundred meg. I don't have any others running. I figured I would have had the Blizzard one running or something, but I don't. I guess I can pop that up real quick and just see. I'm just curious. I mean, because most of these launchers, I actually make the effort to go through and shut them down when I'm not using them. But a lot of them,
yeah,
they set themselves up to run in the background all the time.
This is the thing.
200 meg for Blizzard launcher.
I can't see these smart devices for fridges and freezers and shit ever really taking off unless the companies do start supporting with everything. Because I don't know about you, man. I keep my fridge till it dies. I don't rush out and buy the latest fridge that has all the latest updated software, if you know what I mean.
I know people that have fridges from the 50s because they haven't stopped working yet.
Yeah, that's the only time I've ever bought a fridge is because the other one's died, and that's what I'm getting worried about now. How am I going to be able to have... I don't want it connected to the internet. I don't want the internet in my fucking house apart from an ether cable coming in. You know what I mean?
Well, and that's the thing, too. It's like even with like TVs, like... How long do you keep your TVs? The only reason to buy a new one is either the old one broke or the new ones are so much amazingly better, like when they swapped to HD. And even then, it was a while before people were just buying new ones to replace, you know, an old regular set that still worked.
Yeah.
So not only does it have to be better.
I upgraded when it went to HD, and that's it. I also still have the first TV I bought, the old picture tube one, just to play Duck Hunt.
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the point, though, is there's no some of these appliances, if their replacement is not so much amazingly better that you have to upgrade to keep up with it, if it's not broken, why would you?
But we're not consumer whores. That's the problem. They're banking on a lot of people being consumer whores, going, look at my latest, greatest coffee machine.
On a lot of these, what's the actual benefit of having it hooked to the internet? Let's say the thermostat. I know about a week in advance what the temperature is going to be. I can adjust it when I get home or go to work. The only time I could think of it being useful is if I'm on vacation and I happen to go on vacation when fall hits, because where I live, it might be 70 degrees one day in the fall, and then the next day it dropped to zero. So I might need to go from I don't have my heat on to flipping my heat on remotely just to prevent my pipes from freezing. But that's one time a year on a maybe.
Well, and even then, yeah, you can buy programmable thermostats that don't require an internet connection.
Like, yeah.
That was the thing. The only real reason that you want an internet connection on something like a thermostat is to hook it up to your phone so you can change the thermostat without having to get off your ass while watching whatever's on TV.
I'm not that fickle on the temperature. And I still don't see a reason to have an internet connected to a refrigerator.
Neither do I.
So it can order your groceries for you online, obviously. Or you can go to your phone and get an inventory of what's in the fridge when you're at the store so you know what to buy. But again, you're right. I mean, how hard is it like to look in the fridge and make a list? I mean, you know, shit. But it's not.
For that to even work, I would need to either type in what I'm putting in my fridge each time, which I'm too lazy to do.
Get barcode, scan it, man.
Yeah, they
possibly scan it.
They want you to scan it going in, scan it going out. That way it lets you know whether you're needed or not. But
that wouldn't even work for my lifestyle, being a single dude. I actually cook. They don't make packages of meat for one person, or they do, but they're like twice the price. I buy a family pack and break it down. I bought some ribeye steaks. That's two packages of ribeyes that I turned from the one that I bought. So yeah. I couldn't just scan a barcode. I'd have to be able to program what I'm buying for it to even have a remotely good inventory.
Yeah, good point on that one. I'm pretty much the same. I'll break mints and that into half packs and things and freeze some stuff.
But the only thing I could think of with a smart fridge would be, you know, okay, it knows you put a new thing of milk in there on whatever day, and then it notifies you when the milk has probably gone bad. But even then, it's like you're going to notice when you open it if it's gone bad. So,
I've been looking after myself quite some time now, and I pretty much know once a week what I need to shop for and what I don't. Occasionally, I'm like, oh, shit, forgot the shit tickets. You know what I mean? Or, ah, oh, fuck, forgot the washing up liquid. But they're like once a month buy sort of thing.
Sure.
But my weekly groceries, man, I know exactly what I'm getting every week at each time. I fucked up this week. I ran out of food today. I had 3 eggs left. I ate them. And I got a half a bag of crisps. But fuck it, I'll go have steak tomorrow.
There you go. So back to the article. One of the central problems here is that consumers understand these transactions as purchases of products, but that's not quite accurate, says Aaron Perzwalski, a law professor at Case Western Reserve University and the author of The End of Ownership. When you buy a smart plug, for example, you're also entering an ongoing service relationship with the manufacturer. People are essentially tethered to the seller in a way that takes control away from consumers and gives it to sellers, says Perzwalski. Wired spoke with one person affected by the Insignia shutdown who had tweeted about it and asked to be identified by their Twitter handle. I'm not reading out their Twitter handle because screw you, you're not getting followers off my show. When I got the notification, I was pretty shocked that the service was ending, the person said. They said they realized Best Buy was cutting off functionality for their two Insignia light switches late last month when they randomly checked the Insignia Connect app. I had no prior warnings before opening the app. I wasn't emailed or anything. Best Buy announced the shutdown in September, but it's not clear whether consumers received personal notifications alerting them to it. Best Buy did not respond to multiple requests for comment. Of course they didn't. Because what are they going to say? There is no good answer to that.
No, exactly.
You know, what are they going to say? Bend over and prepare your anus? I mean, come on.
Oh, and any shutdown like that, the next question is, how viable is your current business model?
Yeah.
Everyone forgets, but there used to be the store called Circuit City.
Yeah.
It was the world's largest electronics retailer up until the day it shut down.
Well, they made a bunch of weird purchasing decisions, too, that really killed them. But you'd have to have been watching the markets for that shit.
Yeah.
Best Buy isn't alone in choosing to suddenly discontinue its smart home devices. Earlier this year, Lowe's pulled the plug on its Iris smart home platform as well, leaving customers with expensive bricks, as CNET put it. In 2016, after being bought by Nest, Google's smart home arm, Revolve, ceased support for its $300 smart home hub. Then there's the tragic story of Jimbo, a $900 social robot that began dying earlier this year after the company's intellectual property was sold to an investment firm. It's not just a consumer issue. When these gadgets stop working, they often end up in landfills, wreaking havoc on the environment and communities who live nearby. And again, this is why when you're shutting this shit down, you should... And it's hard to do, because if you're shutting it down, you're bankrupt, right? So...
Yeah, there's nothing you can do.
You know, it'd be nice if they, like, opened up the code or said, hey, here's how to solder up a JTAG connector, or somehow gave you a way to do whatever you wanted with these devices, because obviously they're shutting down and don't care anymore.
The average normie is not going to go out of their way to try and reverse hack their fucking fridge. You know what I mean?
No, of course not.
It either works or it doesn't. In the eyes of the normal consumer, it either works or it doesn't. And, they're going to get a spank for this, depending on how many people it affected. But pro tip, don't buy fucking smart connected shit.
Yeah.
I hate this thing they call it smart. It's not smart.
It's not smart, it's computerized.
Exactly.
Consumers spent... No, go ahead.
No, you go.
Consumers spend time researching products, they invest effort in setting them up, and these products are often a part of a whole ecosystem of smart devices in the home, Przewalski said. And even though refunds have become fairly common, we see companies engaging in this practice over and over. He wants to see the Federal Trade Commission or state attorneys general's signal to companies they can't continue selling products they're unable to support for the long haul. The FTC did open an investigation when Nest shut down the Revolve Hub and ultimately decided not to take action. Regulators have stayed largely hands-off on the issue since. Well, actually, so what they should be doing here is anything like these smart home devices, they should be using a standardized protocol so that if the company making it doesn't want to support it, somebody else can. That way you're not just buying trash when Best Buy decides to pull their service, right? Because here's the real question. Okay, they're not going to support this Insignia smart home stuff. I was in a Best Buy not that long ago and picked up the Oculus Quest headset like 2 months ago. They had a big-ass display of smart home devices, and I remember seeing those Insignias in there. So they were still selling them a couple of months ago.
Knowing that they were going to pull a plug.
Yeah, that's bullshit.
That's some fucking bullshit.
So that's the thing. It's like, well, I mean, that's why, if you put a good comparison would be internet protocols and PCs, right? So lots of people make these things, and because they're using standards, they all can kind of connect to each other, right? You know, whether it's web browser or, you know, even different operating systems can still interconnect because they're all using a standard. Graphics cards, they all use the same standards with OpenGL, DirectX, and Vulkan. And so you can have multiple people make graphics cards and they all can still kind of work. So, I mean, this vendor lock-in thing is the problem.
But, well, that's what I mean. Maybe the industry needs to adopt standards so that going forward, consumers aren't left out in the cold.
I don't know if there's real incentive for an individual company to adopt a standard, because then it lets people out of their sandbox.
That's right. And that's the exact problem. I mean, look at Apple with the iPhone, right? They're not exactly rushing to, you know, let third parties do whatever the hell they want outside of the app store.
And one reason that I think that let PCs branch out the way they did is initially the software market, as far as home users went, it was home users making that shit. So yeah. I think they pushed it to be standardized. You know, a home user that's making their own smart system outside of MORPS. You're not a home user. You're weird.
Yeah, that's what the old computer clubs are for. Well, I can see that.
That could be a good peer decking, is how to do your own home automation if you actually want to get into home automation.
Well, it's not that fucking hard. A couple of the ESP32 boards, maybe a Raspi is a central thing, some relay boards, a little bit of soldering.
A licensed electrician, because you don't want to be giving advice like this, MORPS, because you leave yourself liable to be sued.
This is not electrical wiring advice. These are just documentation of my own projects.
I'm just saying, man, you're getting a slippery slope when you start telling people how to do stuff that's meant to be licensed and regulated.
Depends on where you are. I don't think there's license and regulation requirements for home automation here.
Well, but are you talking about the fact that if I'm talking about putting a relay on an outlet?
Okay.
Actually, a MOSFET, a good beefy MOSFET.
I'm just paranoid about that sort of thing. Like, is that chick from YouTube who used to do the home experiment shit? I think she got sued because some kids were following along with a home experiment and someone ended up with third-degree burns. She ended up liable.
How can you be liable for that?
I don't know. I didn't follow the case. I just read the outcome. And it was, you saw every one of those, this is how we do stuff channels pretty much disappear overnight.
That is crazy.
Yeah, I mean...
Other countries have weird fucking laws, man.
It's like, you gave out instructions on how to make cyanide. Well, yeah. Or, well, actually, one relevant for me, you gave out information on how to hack computers. No, I didn't. I was giving out information for sysadmins to know what to look out for.
And the way I do motorcycle maintenance is, well, in car maintenance, one of two ways. I pull up a YouTube video of someone else doing it and I follow along, or I take it to a mechanic.
I always take it to a licensed mechanic. I would never work on any of my home stuff.
I used to use the HUN automotive manuals, but their diagrams suck.
Hey, hey,
the documentation for my insurance purposes, I require a licensed contractor for everything I do.
Hey, are you? Is that government agent holding the gun to your head? Is he thirsty? Want a drink? Want to get involved in the show? You can give him a mic. I mean, you know.
I have no comment.
I mean, well, okay, you know, tell Jim he's welcome to join in the show anytime. I mean, you know.
I'm just saying, be wary of giving advice over the internet that may end up causing injury or harm to anyone.
You know what I mean, man? No, that's exactly what a lot of message boards are for.
I whole disavow.
Hot water challenge, y'all.
Don't make crystals disavow.
The chat room is asking Jim if Epstein killed himself.
That is a definite no. I'm getting a no from that one.
Okay.
And a big move it along sign.
Rats, his name is not RU-232. I'm just going to point that out.
232? What am I, some sort of fucking atomic element?
What do you put in the chat room?
A lot of people wish it was 232 because it causes them a lot of embarrassment.
What is it then? Yeah, just punch this into Google. The morning after pill.
See, now you make me sound like an asshole.
RU-486.
It was originally a wonder drug for fucking Alzheimer's and dementia patients. That's what it was originally designed for. It just is more economic as morning after medication.
The same thing with the boner pill. It's meant to cure heart disease. Has this side effect of giving men erections. Now, how many men have heart attacks and how many men have penises? What's the bigger market?
I fucking hate that you have to ask that question, how many men have penises. But it just reminds me of current year. God damn it.
Do you have problems maintaining an erection with your front hole? I think we just broke somebody.
Yeah, I knocked my headset off. And punched myself in the face at the same time. Fucking quality.
Oh, fuck. Oh, okay.
This show is all over the place today. You coughing, I'm coughing.
And Psychros, that's not counting the number of horrible cheese grater accidents. Let's see. Oh, damn it. The IRC just got weird. Let's move on.
Oh.
Rapidly. Go ahead, man.
This is moving into the you don't own the stuff you buy territory.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
If you no longer have the right of... second ownership, I think, is the term where you can sell stuff that you've bought and own stuff that you've bought. Can we take the right of first sale away from some of these manufacturers?
Don't give them ideas. Hey, comrade. Hey.
You know, it's all the farmers out there just pointing and laughing, going, fucking told you they'd come for you eventually.
Oh, the John Deere.
Yeah. They come for everyone eventually, man.
All right. Next.
You watch, the car market will be next. I guarantee you. No ownership of vehicles.
Tesla's already trying something like that, aren't they?
I think GM here in Australia are trying something like that as well.
They're just making cars harder and harder to work on by a garage mechanic or a shade tree mechanic.
Yeah, and also too, there's no actual ownership of the vehicle. Like, you pay a yearly subscription to the car company, and then you get to pick what car you want to drive that for that week.
Really? Oh, cool. So when I wreck the car, it's not my, it's no skin off my nose. I just get another one, right?
Well, see, that no ownership thing. So I'm going to get a car that somebody's had last week that are just complete fucking degenerate slobs. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Those are called leasing agreements, and they usually go for a few years at a time.
No, this is going to be weekly they're doing this. But yeah, it'll be a sign-up subscription style of thing. And so it's for the dude who needs like the small compact during the week to go to the city work, but also too wants to ride dirt bikes on the weekend. So he goes and gets the 4x4 for the weekend. You know what I mean? That's how they're touting this subscription style. The vehicle, what you need when you want it, or some shit like that. I really don't know. I require more water.
Well, let's see. Next article. This is from Vice.com. This bank has the worst password policy we've ever seen. A European bank makes customers pay to change their passwords and suggests they Google their passwords to check if it's secure.
They want you to feed your password into Google.
Yep.
Doesn't that have Google index your password?
Yep. Passwords are still often the first line of defense against hackers. That's why it's important to help educate users on what a good password is. Finco Bank, a bank with 1.3 million customers in Italy and the UK, suggested an unusual password strategy to its customers. Copy and paste the password into Google and see if anyone else is using it. Verify the security of your passwords, Finco Bank tells new customers when they set up their online account. Insert it into Google. If it returns less than 10 results, that means it's a good password. Or Google's, you know, censored that phrase. Now I'm kind of wondering what we can punch into Google that's horrible and has less than 10 results.
Does it have to be horrible, or it can be anything?
I'm just thinking anything Google would have censored.
Learn to code?
Huh?
Learn to code.
Learn to code. Finco Bank customer support confirmed that the bank suggests customers using to Google their password in order to make the password as secure as possible. For fuck's sake. After we reached out to Finco Bank for comment, a spokesperson said that we understand the criticism and decided not to suggest any more to our clients to do so. In other words, enough people bitched about it. It's like, okay, yeah, we'll pull the bad advice down. It's important to use unique passwords for each website or service you use, because otherwise one stolen password can lead to the compromise of several accounts. As Vice explains in the Motherboard Guide to Not Getting Hacked, so Finco Bank has at least the right intention, suggesting people choose unique passwords, but telling them to paste them online as a test of their strength is definitely not okay, as that could expose the password to Google and perhaps other snoopers. I like how they wrote this, as the, you know, Google is a snooper, and they're right.
They are. It's just, read my email.
You know, it's just funny that they wrote it that way. Instead, the best advice is to use a password manager. These are programs that help you create unique passwords and store them securely. You don't need to remember them because the password manager will do it for you. Unless, of course, your hard drive dies, so, you know, backups, people. To make matters much worse, Finco Bank charges a fee for customers who want to change their password if they want it delivered via mail. Oh, that's not nearly as bad. That's headline clickbaiting. I misread this thing earlier. Damn it. In a public page on site, Finco Bank says that customers who request a password change will receive it via mail, like, you know, paper mail, and will be charged 0.95 euros, about a dollar, or 2.95 British pounds if they're in the UK to get it.
Postage.
Yeah, and they said they can change it online for free. So that part's probably buried. Luckily, as part of the account activation process, Finco Bank requires customers to set up a second factor when logging in online. Several people working in the cybersecurity industry pointed at the strange, at least to say, policies on Twitter Tuesday, like facepalming every time they hit tweet. So, okay, that's not so bad. That's not nearly as bad as it was presented earlier, and I misread the part earlier about the about it being postage, because it's like, oh, well, that kind of makes sense, but because you can change it online.
Who wants
for
to
free.
Have their password mailed to them?
Old people.
Okay. I'm thinking when I change my password, it's either because I've honestly forgotten which passwords go to which accounts, and I've locked myself out, or I think I've been compromised somewhere, and I'm just changing passwords because I don't remember which ones go to which accounts. So it's time to change all of them.
Yeah, pretty much.
Fair enough.
So, yeah.
And I don't want that mailed. I want it to happen, like, right now.
I just, yeah, I mean, the fact that they're even mailing passwords because, you know, people go through other people's mail. So I don't think that's a good idea at all. But I misread that earlier, or I didn't read far enough. I only skimmed the article. I like skimming them. That way I have, you know, real responses to them rather than, you know, like, okay, you know, yeah, I'm going to say this and that. I don't want to get that planning. I don't want to do that kind of planning ahead because then it's not as much fun. So I was a little disappointed when I read that because the headline was like they're charging people to change their password because I could see fucking companies doing that. And it's like, you know, if you want to do it by mail, well, it's like, oh, postage. Well, never mind then. So
it's like, yeah, but you're the eternal pessimist.
Well, I wouldn't be
nothing
that
wrong
way.
With that.
I wouldn't be that way if shit didn't always go wrong.
Zachary. Never disappointed then.
All your surprises are pleasant ones. It's like, yep. Oh, I woke up and I wasn't on fire this morning. This is amazing.
There you go, it is a man. Nice thing. That's
it's
a beautiful
a great
thing
feeling.
When you wake up and you're not on fire. Or stabbed.
And shit goes right.
Or have, or have your little toes tied to the bed and you know somebody setting off the fire alarm in the middle of the night.
Only did it the once. On, Your Honor.
Well, you know, not waking up because you've got a, you know, cat chewing on your arm or something. That's a beautiful way to wake up in the morning is not being attacked by a
cat. I was going to say, that's a paranoia I'd have, like, if I had a cat, like, waking up, like, it's trying to suffocate me.
I've never had them chewing on me, but I've woke up with cats staring at me, and I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? Sitting on my chest, and its nose was almost touching my nose, and it was staring at me.
It's waiting for you to wake up so you can feed it.
Eating me?
It was deciding which eyeball to eat.
It was deciding, you know, what the best way to awaken you so you could feed it was. It's like, do I scratch out the eyes? Do I lick it on the nose? Do I try to choke it?
With the exception of scratching out the eyes, I think all of those have happened.
My parents used to have a cat that would sleep on the top of whatever pillow you were using. So you would shift in the middle of the night, and this cat would roll down onto your face asleep. It was unintentionally trying to suffocate you, which didn't work all that well, because what do most people do when they can't sleep and can't breathe in the middle of the night?
They wake up violently.
They wake up violently and usually try to get up, which tends to send the cat flying, which is rather comical when you see it happen to somebody else, but panic-inducing when it happens to you. So,
and why I don't own cats.
Next article. This is from Reuters. U.S. judge rules suspicionless searches of travelers' digital devices unconstitutional.
Well, no shit.
I don't have the hallelujah effect on the soundboard anymore because we never used it.
Wow, that's a big step.
A federal judge on Tuesday ruled that the U.S. border agents need reasonable suspicion, but not a warrant, by the way. Reasonable suspicion. So they have to, you know, at least put something in whatever they're filing, you know, the write-up or the ticket, you know, saying why they searched this guy's bag, smartphone, I should say. But not a warrant to search travelers' smartphones and laptops at airports and other U.S. ports of entry, a practice that has been growing in recent years. U.S. District Judge Denise Casper in Boston ruled in a lawsuit by 11 travelers that border officials need to be able to point to specific facts to justify searching someone's devices for contraband like child porn and counterfeit media. Counterfeit media. I think they mean pirated media, but that's an interesting way to put it.
Yeah, it's a big step away from child porn, though.
Yeah. That is a higher standard than agents with the U.S. Customs and Border Protection and U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement under their current policies have been required to apply to conduct routine searches of electronic devices. While she said that officials have a paramount interest in protecting the border, the privacy interests of travelers whose troves of personal information could otherwise be searched without cause had to be balanced against it. This requirement reflects both the important privacy interests involved in searching electronic devices and the defendant's governmental interest in the border, Casper wrote. The judge said that to the extent CPB and ICE policies allowed for the searches without cause, they violated the U.S. Constitution's Fourth Amendment protections against unreasonable searches and seizures. But Casper declined to force agents to have probable cause and secure warrants before searching devices, a higher standard sought by the plaintiff's lawyers at the American Civil Liberties Union and Electronic Frontier Foundation. Isha Badari, an attorney with the ACLU, said in a statement that the ruling significantly advances Fourth Amendment protections for the millions of international travelers who enter the United States every year. By putting an end to the government's ability to conduct suspicionless fishing expeditions, the court reaffirms that the border is not a lawless place and that we don't lose our privacy rights when we travel, Badari said. The GPB had no immediate comment, or GPB-CPB, I'll get it right eventually. The number of electronic devices searched at the border has ballooned during Donald Trump's administration, rising on a fiscal year basis from about 8,500 in 2015 to more than 30,000 in 2018, according to the ACLU. Are they using Donald Trump's administration as a demarcation of time, or are they trying to blame Trump?
I don't know anymore. But because it is it that makes lore sense. Is one of the reasons...
But it makes sense because you just have more devices in circulation.
And it's one of the reasons I wasn't bringing a laptop this time around.
I don't blame you.
Oh, have you been, they search yours every time?
No, I've never been electronically searched. I've been physically searched and questioned, but...
So you've gotten the freedom fondle, but...
Yeah, I get pulled aside, man, every fucking time, because I just don't do security. I get paranoid. I can't help myself.
You look suspicious, so you act suspicious. Yeah,
you look nervous.
Well, I know what the stakes are. You know what I mean? Knowing the stakes makes me nervous. Because one wrong word means another 20-hour flight return that, you know,
yeah,
it's not worth it. That's why I'm not bringing a laptop this time. I'll buy one there that Fox wants. And then I'll leave it for him. Oh, it's going to be riddled with porn and viruses by the time I'm finished.
Yeah, here it is. That's just taking a flamethrower to the hard disk, but you know.
The only thing electronic I'll be bringing is an MP3 player. Something
to listen to on the flight?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, here we go. The Civil Liberties Group and the EFF filed lawsuits in 2017 on behalf of 10 U.S. citizens and one lawful resident whose devices were searched without a warrant. Several were Muslim or minorities. The travelers included a military veteran, National Aeronautics and Space Administration engineer, and why don't you just say NASA? More people will recognize it by NASA than the full name. Two journalists and a computer programmer. So, yeah, Cycros, when they say put your phone in the bin and RU doesn't, it's because he doesn't have a phone. And then they don't believe him when he says, I don't have a phone. And then out come the rubber gloves.
I've never used a phone, man. And these guys will attest, they've known me for, 15 years? And I've never had a phone. Even at the meetups.
We gave him a CB radio to contact him.
And even then, it took some effort to get his attention on the CB radio. And once we finally succeeded at that, you threw shit at my car. So
I'm not paranoid about having them or anything like that. I'm just paranoid about having them. No, it's got nothing to do with that. I have a firm belief that if I'm not near a landline, I don't need to be contacted. There's nothing I can't wait for the simple fact I don't deliver children and I'm not an emergency brain surgeon. So when I'm out, I want to be left alone. When I want to be in front of a computer, it'll be a hard wait. It'll be a regular computer. Sick of having to justify myself to everybody goes, but why? You know, every fucking person.
Actually, are you? This is a question from the IRC. Are you secretly or RMS? And then it's like, no. Are you an RMS? Don't look anything alike. But are you would fit inside of an RMS costume?
All right, next story.
Next story. This one's from TechCrunch. Facebook has faced a barrage of concern, and I'm only doing this article because, like, every other fucking link on my usual sources for news stories was this story. And that's what drives me nuts when I'm digging through the Reddits and the news aggregators and the feeds. And every other fucking story is the same story, just from a different blog or a different website.
And they've only changed a couple of sentences, and it's lazy as fuck.
Yeah, so we will mention this story, probably go, yep, we're not surprised, and move on. So here we go. Facebook has faced a barrage of concern over an apparent bug that resulted in the social media giant's iPhone app exposing the camera as users scroll through their feed. A tweet over the weekend blew up after Joshua Maddox tweeted a screen recording of the Facebook app on his phone. He noticed that the camera would appear behind the Facebook app as he scrolled through the social media feed. Several users had already spotted the bug earlier in the month. One person called it a little worrying. And they have a video here. It's like when you're scrolling through the feed, occasionally the whole screen scrolls up and there's the camera. Because that's how iPhones do multitasking, is, you know, you swipe up on the screen, you can get to different apps. Some immediately assume the worst, as you might expect, given the long history of security vulnerabilities, data breaches, and inadvertent exposures of Facebook over the past year. Just last week, the company confirmed that some developers had improperly retained access to some Facebook user data for more than a year. Will Stafferich, a chief executive at Guardian Firewall, said it looked like a harmless but creepy-looking bug. The bug appears to only affect iPhone users running the latest iOS 13 software and those who have already granted the app access to the camera and microphone. It's believed the bug relates to the story view in the app, which opens the camera for users to take photos. So it's somehow opening the camera in the background by accident, is what it sounds like. One workaround is simply revoke camera and microphone access to the Facebook app and their iOS settings. Facebook Vice President of Integrity... The fact that you need a vice president of integrity is, you know, chilling.
Yeah.
Guy Rosen tweeted this morning that it sounds like a bug, and the company was investigating. Only after we published, a spokesperson confirmed to TechCrunch that the issue was, in fact, a bug. And I believe they've already fixed it. We've recently discovered that version 2.4.4 of the Facebook iOS app would incorrectly launch in landscape mode, the spokesperson said. Fixing that issue last week with version 2.4.6 launched on November the 8th, we inadvertently introduced a bug that caused the app to partially navigate to the camera screen adjacent to the newsfeed when the user tapped on photos. We have seen no evidence of photos or videos being uploaded due to the bug. The bug fix was submitted for Apple's approval today, and I think this article is from yesterday. I guess it does say something on Facebook trusted wrote so badly that it will not even get the benefit of the doubt when people see such a bug. So, when was this posted? This was posted on the 12th, so 2 days ago. But my understanding is that this is pretty much already fixed. But I just wouldn't have the Facebook app on your phone if you can help it. I mean, even if you're a heavy Facebook user, just, you know, use the mobile site because
it runs the battery
fucking down and just pulls all kinds of shit off your phone.
Aren't phones pre-installed with that shit now?
Yeah, but you have to sign in for it to do anything. So
you just
pull in package disabler and turn that shit off. At least on Android. No. I don't see it coming on iOS by default. I haven't observed it coming on iOS by default. Let me put it that way.
Not yet. Yet well, being the word.
I don't have iPhones anymore, but I know enough people who do, and I do have pads. So, like I said, I haven't noticed the Facebook app coming in. I have noticed it coming in by default on Samsung phones, but it's pretty easy to run package disabler and just turn it off. What's interesting is the shit that broke when you turned it off was the VR stuff. And since in the latest versions of the phones, they killed the VR stuff, there's not really much of a reason to keep the iOS, you know, to not disable Facebook.
So, yeah.
You know, if nothing else, seriously, saves a shit ton of battery life, which should tell
that
you something.
That is bizarre that it kills the VR crap.
Who owns Oculus?
Okay. Going Facebook.
Which sucks because the Oculus stuff is I'm pretty pleased with at the moment. Like I picked up the Quest, and I'm pretty happy with it. I like it. I feel like it's a good headset, and when they add the thing to let you hook it up to a computer with USB 3 so it can be a Rift, I mean, shit. You know, that's a pretty good setup. But and the more I've used it, the more I've noticed the Facebook integration stuff's pretty off to the side at the moment. You can sign in with a Facebook account or an Oculus account. So, of course, you just use a straight-up Oculus account. And they've got some, you know, different, like, metaverse stuff. They're trying to make a metaverse around Facebook, and I just haven't installed that. So, and a lot of games want to do their high scores and stuff, and they're probably using Facebook on the back end for that. But I haven't noticed it being too intrusive, but also I haven't sat there and packet captured the thing. Oh, damn it, now I need to do that.
No, now you want to do that. There's a difference.
No, Madman, it's not a want. I have to know.
Oh. You have to know how much of Facebook's get if Facebook knows your pirate trainer high score.
It's a compulsion. I can't help it. I have to know.
I never look behind the curtain.
Oh, well, at least sniffing Wi-Fi is easy these days. So, anyways, next article. You guys ready for move on? You want?
Yeah. Okay. I'm good.
This one's cool. It's from Bloomberg. Open source code will survive the apocalypse in an Arctic cave.
Why?
Why not? The last stop for civilization before the North Pole is Svalbard. Svalbard. An archipelago north of mainland Norway along the 80th parallel. Most of Svalbard's old Norwegian and Russian coal mines have shut down, so locals have rebranded their vast acres of permafrost as an attraction to scientists, doomsday preppers, and scientists, doomsday preppers. I didn't know that was a thing.
There's crossover.
Okay. Around Svalbard, things can be hidden from the stresses of the outside world. There's a treaty in place that keeps it neutral in times of war. In other words, it's an ideal spot for a big global reset button or two. Pride of place belongs to the Svalbard Global Seed Vault, where seeds from a wide range of plants, including the crops most valuable to humans, are preserved in case some type of famine-inducing pandemic or, you know, nuclear apocalypse. The seed vault looks like something out of a movie. Its entrance is triangular obelisk jutting out of a building of a blinding white expanse. It sparkles with glowing green lights. Nat Friedman, however, hasn't come for the Beat the Apocalypse aesthetics. On October 24th, the tall, thin, 42-year-old chief executive of GitHub, Microsoft's world-leading code bank, hops into a van and drives about 15 minutes from his hotel to an abandoned coal mine, where he puts on a miner's helmet and headlamp. Deep inside one of the mine's frigid, eerily quiet arteries, Friedman comes to what looks like a metal tool shed. There's a more miney and rustic and raw a hole in the rock. Okay. Blah, 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 blah. This is the Arctic World Archive, the Seed Vault's much less sexy cousin. Friedman unlocks the container door with a simple door key and inside deposits much of the world's open source software code. Servers and flash drives aren't durable enough for this purpose, so the data is encoded in what looks like old school movie reels, each weighing a few pounds and stored in a white plastic container about the size of a pizza box. It's basically microfilm. With the help of a magnifying glass, you can see the data. Be it pictures, text, or lines of code. A Norwegian company called Pickle AS makes the specialized rolls of super durable film coated with iron oxide powder for added Armageddon resistance. Pichel says the material should hold up for 750 years in normal conditions and perhaps 2,000 years in a cold, dry, low-oxygen cave. Freeman places his reel on one of the archive's shelves alongside a couple of dozen that include Vatican archives, Brazilian land registry records, and loads of Italian movies, and the recipe for certain burger chain special sauce. GitHub, with Microsoft's, which Microsoft bought last year for $7.5 billion, plans to become by far the biggest tenant. Eventually, Freeman said GitHub will leave 200 platters, each carrying 120 gigabytes of open source code, in the vault. The first reel included the Linux and Android operating systems, plus 6,000 other important open source applications. They're onto it being a stunt, but I don't need to read the rest of this. It's all wordy, and they're having fun with it. But they've got some cool pictures here of the vault where it's an old coal mine, and above the Arctic Circle that they've converted into a vault, basically. But, I don't know what good this microfilm with, code on it is if, there's no working computers. Would there be working computers after an apocalypse? I mean, if it's nuclear, probably not because of all the, EMPs going on.
It's a fancy little wank project for fucking, grad students. I don't give two fucks.
It's kind of cool. That they're grabbing the major open source projects and archiving them, but kind of. Cool. It's kind of a wank project.
There would be functioning computers. I don't know how many of them there would be or how easy it would be to get to that vault once you're trying to rebuild civilization. One reason I know there'd be functioning computers, they're probably doing it the same way that Iron Mountain does it in the Library of Congress.
Yeah.
There's the devices stored in there for reading the material.
Yeah. So, interesting, but not practical.
Not as practical as the seed bank.
Well, anything bad enough to require the use of the seed bank is probably going to lead to, extinction anyways, which means what we're really doing is archiving it for alien archaeologists when they find the planet. So,
You know the bananas that you grew up eating?
Sure.
Aren't the bananas that your great-grandparents grew up eating?
Yep. Thanks, Monsanto.
We over-cultivated a particular form of banana, and then a blight came through South America and jumped to every banana grove because there wasn't enough biodiversity between the groves to prevent it from spreading from grove to grove. And it wiped out an entire species of banana tree. This was before we decided to archive seeds. Had we archived that particular banana, we could have reintroduced it after the blight went away. So seed vaults have a practical today application. In Florida, we're having a problem with a citrus blight. We don't know how to cure it. And once a grove has it, you can't get rid of it. You just have to burn the grove down. So if it gets bad enough that whatever variety of, I don't know what orange we're growing down there, goes extinct, it's not going to go extinct. We're going to wait 5 or 6 years after we burn the last tree, and then we're going to plant a whole new grove.
Cool. All right. No, that's a good point, and I hadn't really thought about it too much, especially with, reading that article about it all being, after the apocalypse. But
Other cool thing, we kind of do them nationwide. It's not a full vault, but heirloom seeds. There's a lot of farmers vaulting those, and you can go check out. They say it's checking out like a library book, heirloom seeds. You plant them, and then you return how many ever seeds after your harvest of what you initially took out.
Yeah.
Huh.
So you can start a complete garden for free. No one owns the patents to the seeds. They're all heirloom.
Do that with a garden club here.
You just reminded me. I think in the back of my pantry, I have a can of various heirloom seeds because I had subscribed to one of those survivor boxes for a while. And that was one of the things in it. And it's like, oh, yeah, I'll just store that. And then course, it's probably all gone. It's probably all expired by now. But
beets don't expire.
Depending on how you stored them, so long as they haven't germinated, you're fine.
Yeah, as long as they're not.
I never opened
dark,
it, so they're probably still sealed.
A dark, dry place, man.
They're in a can.
They're good to go.
They're sealed in a can, and assuming I didn't already throw it away, I mean, it's just sitting there.
I've got a bag of hemp seeds that I've had for 25 years. They still grow.
Well, cool.
Yeah. Yeah, keep your seeds, man. Don't bother keeping anything unless it is heirloom, because most of them has been fucked around with now, and don't. You'll get seeds after the first crop, but they won't germinate. Or if they do, they'll germinate into some sort of Franken plant.
Yeah, something that's not going to have a fruit or anything like that.
Yeah.
It could have a fruit, but one bizarre thing, some of the apples we eat, if you plant the seed, you won't get that apple. You'll get its actual ancestor.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are a lot of, I do remember reading about that, that a lot of our fruit crops and things like that are all cuttings from like a mutated plant, not the original. Like apparently something like that with blackberries too.
Boy, marijuana is so fucking potent, dude.
Oh, yeah, you're not going to find a straight strain of marijuana anymore. They're all hybrids.
Yeah.
Speaking of, RU sent me this last story here. This is from the BBC.com. Brain implants used to fight drug addiction in the United States.
I thought it was cool.
Does it just zap the pleasure center of your brain whenever you're doing a drug, getting the opposite effect?
Patients with severe opioid addiction, so, you know, the marijuana was kind of a bad segue, but, you know, whatever. With severe opioid addictions are being given brain implants to help reduce the cravings in the first trial of its kind in the U.S. Gerald Buckhaltler, 33, who has struggled with substance abuse for more than a decade, with many relapses and overdoses, has already had the surgery.
Quitter.
Quitter. Lead doctor Ali Rinzaldi described the device as a pacemaker for the brain. So, yeah, it's zapping you. But he added it was not a consumer technology and should not be used for augmenting humans. Mr. Buckhalter had his operation on the 1st of November in West Virginia University Medical Hospital. More than three more volunteers will also have the procedure. It starts with a series of brain scans. Surgery follows with doctors making a small hole in the skull to insert a tiny 1 millimeter electrode into a specific area of the brain that regulates impulses such as addiction and self-control. A battery is inserted into the collarbone, and brain activity will then be remotely monitored by a team of physicians, psychologists, and addiction experts to see if the cravings recede. The so-called deep brain stimulation has already been approved by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration for treating a range of conditions, including Parkinson's disease, epilepsy, and obsessive-compulsive disorder. Some 180,000 people around the world already have brain implants. This is the first time DBS has been approved for drug addiction, and it has been a complex trial involving many teams, including ethicists, psychologists, and many regulators. Over the next 2 years, the patients will be closely monitored. Dr. Renzani told the BBC, addiction is complex. There are a range of social dynamics at play and genetic elements, and some individuals will have a lack of access to treatment, so their brains will slowly change and they will still have more cravings. This treatment is for those who have failed every other treatment, whether that is medicine, behavioral therapy, and social interventions. It is a very rigorous trial with oversight from ethicists and regulators and many other governing bodies. He points to figures which suggest overdoses are the main cause of death for under 50s in the U.S. Over half of patients relapse. We need to find some solutions because it is a life-threatening situation and something which impacts family and loved ones. West Virginia has the highest age-adjusted rate of drug overdose deaths involving opioids in the U.S. There are in 2017, there were 49.6 such deaths. How do you have 0.6 of a death? Anyways, per 100,000 people, according to the National Institute on Drug Abuse.
Because it's per 100,000 people.
I know. but the concept of 0.6 of a death is kind of amusing. It's like, well,
I still love half the kid dying.
He's mostly dead. You know, kind of vampiric. You know, a little bit of undeath, but
it's where you have the average families like what 2.3 people.
Yeah,
you had two of the average families. Their faction died.
Their fraction died.
good news on that addiction front for opioids there. It turns out the company that may have got everyone addicted now has the cure. No one saw that coming.
We're not pulling another bear. No.
So, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, the problem is, at least for me, is their solution is still just, we're going to put an electrode in the brain and zap it and hope for the best.
Anything, man.
If it works, that's fantastic, right? I'm not knocking
if it works.
I would just prefer some Ghost in the Shell level bullshit where they, you know.
It's a chemical problem. I think we can fix it with a chemical solution. I don't think wetware for that is the way to go, but definitely for the OCD and some dementia issues, wetware can be a great thing, but I think they're really reaching with this opioid thing. I don't want to say that they just go on for the money, if you know what I mean.
It does kind of seem probably, like, well, let's see what this does. I mean,
yeah, it's like, okay, we know it works for this. Let's get some grant money, you know what I mean? It just, I don't want to shit on the work they're doing, but at the same time.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Go
part
ahead,
of
man,
the
man.
Addiction thing is messing with the wetware, so they're messing with the wetware also to counteract the addiction.
I mean, anything to help these people that really want the help?
Well, and plus, too, they're, you know, it's medical experimentation, and as long as everybody's on the up and up of what's going on with it, that's, you know, that's fine.
I would really want the ethics committee to really debate, can someone addicted to drugs actually make conscious decisions for their own welfare? And I don't know whether a long-term opioid user can make a conscious decision for themselves on their own welfare.
Well,
That would move on to not just opioid users, but an alcoholic. Your brain chemistry has been changed.
It's, yeah, cigarette smokers, everything, man. I used to have countless fucking hours of debate over this shit. The ethics of treating people who have drug addiction. But I don't want to start that now because I'm getting hungry. Let's move on.
All right. Well, Artie's getting hungry. Let's see if we can wrap up the show. We are already at 72 minutes, so let's do this. Two things for you tonight in Digital Dojo. The first is a GHacks article. It's detailing the tool GNS3, and this is not one I was aware of. Coffee drinkers, sugar consumers, yeah. You know, where does that slippery slope end?
Eating. Eating can be an addictive aspect. We're now dieting by shocking your brain.
You play too many video games? Here's the car battery.
It's a slippery slope. You'll spend hours going down it.
So, anyways, with GNS3, this is a graphical network simulator. So, this consists of a couple of tools. They've actually got an all-in-one executable that includes a bunch of things. And then a virtual machine that's actually running the back end of it. And what this tool lets you do is it lets you define a virtual network inside of your machine. So you can set up a switch, routers, firewalls. Actually, there were several guides on grabbing the Cisco iOS images so you could actually run virtual Cisco switches. And you can then have running virtually a virtual network. So you could then try running different things against it. You could use it for Cykros apparently used it to get a certification, so apparently he's played with this before. But the guide on here is how to set the thing up without going through all the registration on the main website, because you can apparently pull it off their GitHub without having to register. And, you know, they got it up and running in VMware Player, but they've got images for VirtualBox and some other tools as well. So, pretty cool tool. I've not used it before, but thought it was interesting, worth pointing out. And I could easily see using this for testing scanning tools and mapping tools. And I can also see network professionals using it to simulate environment and how to write up Cisco configs and test them without actually having to, you know, screw with a real network. I could easily see that. So a lot of good uses for this, especially in the networking environment. And even if you're not in the networking environment, it's something to play with, right? So
yeah.
With our last conversation, I was just thinking, yeah, I can give my computer multiple personality syndrome.
Yeah, kind of.
And switches on how to turn each personality on and off.
Speaking of multiple personality syndrome, that's a bad segue. The next thing I have for you tonight in Digital Dojo is the BBC, their podcast, The Digital Human, did a deep dive into Terry Davis. They apparently scoured through a whole bunch of his posts and live streams and, with what happened to him, and, you know, go into TempleOS and why he was writing this thing and thought that, it, you know, because it was a message from God. And if you've not been following the Terry Davis stuff, it's pretty interesting. But, if you know who Terry is, it's, you know, it's interesting to see what somebody thought of him, you know, digging through it and understanding it. So the tagline here is, when a homeless man was killed by a train on, you know, the 8th, on 11-8-18, in the Dallas, Oregon, no one realized how many people it would affect. He was Terry Davis, and he was on a mission from God. So it's a half-hour podcast.
He was pushed by glow-in-the-darks.
Oh, God. So, anyways, that stuff's always interesting. And, you know, hey, the BBC did a, you know, half-hour documentary on the dude. So, you know, it sucks that he died. I didn't want the dude to get... I didn't want anything bad to happen to the dude, right?
No, man. We wanted Terry to live forever. But unfortunately, God's walk on this earth cannot live that long.
So, of course, that's all I got for you tonight. Listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Peer decking every Thursday, the Galaxy 15 radio site, the subreddit, and in the IRC tonight, we have myself, Sardonyx, Cykros, Herats, Iron Angel, and Madman. Madman, closing thoughts.
Are you the one that came up with the phrase, Hail Server?
No, I think so.
I
think you're thinking of it might be a Sean Kennedy thing.
Yeah, I think it was.
Okay.
The server prayer.
Yeah. That all you have for closing thoughts?
Yeah, I think he should have come up with it. I'm going to attribute to Terry.
Fair enough.
Now on,
I don't have a dog in that fight. That's fine. Are you closing thoughts?
Just remember, if you see a glow in the dark in the middle of the road, do not break. Terry wouldn't. Just think, what would Terry do?
No, don't live your life that way. You'll end up getting pushed in front of a fucking train.
I like to think, what would Terry do? And then I do that.
Explains why RU has been yelling at the walls in the subway for the past 45 minutes.
Damn glow in the darks.
Whew. Fuck.
Seriously, listen. Go deep dive into Terry, man. He's great.
We need to get
just unfortunate
clips.
What absolute genius can do to the brain. Turn you into an absolute fucking madman.
Well, the thing to keep in mind is, I mean, okay, yeah, TempleOS is weird, but the dude wrote an entire from the ground up operating system.
Yeah.
I mean,
is it trying to explain to Terry to people again? So he built a computer. Who cares? No, you're not following this. He built a compiler. He built everything.
Yeah, he wrote it all. He started from scratch. Now, he did it in a virtual machine, but he did it from scratch, man. As in, like, the low-level C for all the assembler for all of it. This is the equivalent. What he built was the equivalent of a... of, okay, some people build a house. Like, you know, they build their own house over, like, a couple of years. This dude built a skyscraper from the foundation up entirely on his own. The electrical, the plumbing, the foundation, all of it.
Like, and, don't get me wrong, the architecture wasn't the most beautiful part of this building.
Yeah, there were parts of it that were clearly held together with duct tape, but still.
Still.
It stood.
Yeah. And it still stands today.
So
anyone run Temple OS?
Yes, I've run it. But you gotta...
It's weird.
Gonna use a virtual machine. It's really janky to get it to work.
You have to use 640 by 480 because that's the holy resolution.
And it's command line stuff as well on most of it, and that just rules me out.
640 by 480 because it is the holy resolution.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
Or maybe it was 8 by 600, but yeah, it was whatever the resolution was. It was ordained by God.
He even got games for it. He programmed his own games.
Oh, like, I can play Pac-Man.
Like, literally, the dude wrote his own operating system and wrote his own software for it, and, like, nobody else had anything to do with it because the dude was so nuts. Although, I don't think... Did he ever publish the source for it? I don't think it was open source.
Yeah, it's out there.
It is now.
But when
he was writing it, I don't think it was open source. I don't think he published the source until way later.
Like, there are dudes out there who have done plenty of deep dives into Terry. So if you want to hear about his crazier later life stuff, yeah, that's interesting. But you got to go look at his whole life, man.
Well, yeah, because like, the whole early days, he had several high-end computing jobs. And,
yeah,
you know, he wrote all kinds of software and made... I mean, I think he worked for Adobe at one point. And, I mean... And the dude had some kind of a breakdown, ended up with his parents for a while, then they kicked him out.
Violence, and yeah.
I mean, yeah, he's... I mean, if when you look into what happened to him, because, I mean, he was doing well. He was going to be something, and then just, broke. I mean...
Yep. I mean, yeah, just...
I mean, it's actually a really tragic story.
It is a tragic story, but it's like watching a man reach the top of a mountain and then just fall backwards all the way back down. Tragic life, but he lived it his way. I'll give him that.
So that's all I got tonight. I guess we can start hitting buttons on the soundboard and close out the show.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Time to go nose down and call it a night.
Hairy bipedal species of space lizards offer their own unique benefits.
But shut up, Wesley.